Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners. Hello again, and welcome back to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Today we have two stories for you. The first is about a Jewish religious leader in France who is trying very hard to make friends with his neighbors of the Islamic faith. Then we are off to Nigeria to hear how many disabled people are being trained to earn a living. Let's get started with part one. France is guarding against new violence after the terrorist attack last month near the city of Lyon. The attack came only 6 months after deadly shootings in Paris. One community is very worried, French Jews. The attack has added tensions to relations between French Jews and Muslims. The ties were already tense over conflict in the Middle East and anti-Semitism, hatred of and discrimination against Jews. Yet France's Jewish and Muslim communities share a common tradition, and as far as one religious leader is concerned, the two groups are meant to be friends. Drivers slow down to look at Michel Seferty, who is both a big man physically and a Jewish leader or rabbi. He wears a black hat on a visit to Le Courneuve, a town near Paris. A snow-white beard covers his face. Rabbi Seferty is telling a man in a white T-shirt about being called a dirty Jew as he walked down the street. The man agrees it was a shameful act, but he says it does not represent the opinions of many Muslims like himself. The two men talk in front of the offices of the Union of Islamic Organizations of France, a group with ties to Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood. It seems a strange place to find a rabbi, but Michel Seferty is not your usual clergyman. For years, he has traveled around France in an old minibus covered with signs saying, "Solidarity between Jews and Muslims," and "We are more alike than you think." The rabbi walks through neighborhoods with high crime rates and large immigrant communities. He talks with Muslim leaders, students, and even drug dealers. Since the Paris terrorist attacks, Michel Seferty's work has taken on new meaning. The rabbi hands out flyers to those he meets. He says people sometimes take his handouts and throw them into the street. They say Jews must be killed and that Adolf Hitler has not finished his work. Many Jews were killed in Europe during the years Hitler ruled Germany. Michel Seferty has heard hard things, but he has never had any serious incident, which means that there is the possibility of dialogue. Discussions are what the Jewish Muslim Friendship Association is all about. Rabbi Seferty directs the group from his synagogue in Ris-Arangis, a quiet town near Paris. Next to the religious center sit a mosque and a church. The rabbi says the placement of the buildings next to each other was done for a reason, to push for understanding among the three groups. But Michel Seferty has had round-the-clock protection since the Paris attacks. The rabbi wanted an interfaith team, but says he could not find any Jews who were interested. So he travels around France with several young Muslims who work for his association and Imam Mohammed Azizi. Rabbi Seferty has known the Muslim leader for years. They both immigrated to France from their native Morocco. Imam Azizi says the fight against anti-Semitism, discrimination, and hatred of Muslims takes a long time. He says it requires a lot of energy and effort. Attacks against Jews in France have increased since Rabbi Sefferti founded his group in 2005. Often the men responsible for the attacks are young Muslims. But prejudice goes both ways. Mr. Sefferti remembers the time he met a group of Hasidic Jews. One told him he was wrong to continue his work. The man also said that Jews and Muslims will hate each other forever. But the rabbi pushes on. In Le Courneuve, he arrives unannounced at the Union of Islamic Organizations of France, known locally as the UOIF. Union official Ghazi Webby offers coffee and says Mr. Sefferti seems like a member of his family. The two men take photographs together. They agree that there needs to be more communication between Jews and Muslims. Mr. Webby praises Michel Sefferti and his program. He says more dialogues will make Jews and Muslims understand each other. He adds, the UOIF also opens its doors to non-members of the organization. In June, the French government awarded Mr. Sefferti the National Order of Merit for his efforts. His organization has grown to several offices around France. Slowly, he believes, the seeds of Jewish-Muslim friendship are bearing fruit. You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. In Nigeria, an estimated 20 million people have some kind of physical disability. They have physical problems that make it difficult to find work and hold a job. Some of the disabled end up on city streets, asking strangers for help. But in Kaduna State, a group of disabled men has been persuading others to get off the street by offering them new skills. Ann Ball has more.
Our story begins outside the offices of a local charity. A group of men who are physically disabled wait there for food from the aid group. It may be the only meal they get that day. Because the men are disabled, most depend on begging in the streets to support themselves. Aliyu Yakubu is unlike those men. He is learning job skills to earn a living wage. He is being shown how to fix tricycles and do other metal work. The 18-year-old remembers when he decided to stop begging. He says, "My former class prefect saw me begging on the street and didn't recognize me. He gave me some money. When I stretched out my hand to collect it, then he saw my face. I felt ashamed, and since then I decided not to beg again." Isaka Maji is also physically disabled. He helps people like Aliyu Yakubu get work and get off the streets. He teaches them a trade. He learned his skills from a government-operated training program. 5 years ago, Mr. Maji started helping other disabled people to stop begging. He says, "We encourage people like us to learn skills they can do to become self-reliant, to support themselves and their families, because being in the streets as beggars is a disgrace to all of us." To date, he has helped and trained 30 people. Some of them even have their own metalworking businesses now. They make tricycles and motorbikes designed for handicapped individuals. But that is not all they make. They also make doors and windows to sell. Ridwan Abdullahi is a member of the Handicapped Association and a business owner. He says the group is making good quality products, but people are not buying. He says he believes many people think goods made by the disabled are not as good as those made by others. The disabled men waiting for a meal say this is one more barrier the disabled face. They say that with the help of the government and community, they will overcome it by bringing people's attention to their concerns. I'm Ann Ball.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Every day, people come into contact with thousands of chemicals. These chemicals are said to be harmless to human health. In fact, the chemicals are considered so safe that we wash with them. We put them on our bodies and even our faces. Other chemical products are used throughout our homes. By the time you walk out your front door, you have already been exposed to thousands of chemicals. On its own, each chemical seems harmless. But in combination with other chemicals, they may become deadly. That is the finding of a 2-year study by a high-profile task force of scientists. The task force was told to investigate the cancer-causing possibility of chemical mixtures. Linda Gulliver was one of 174 scientists on the task force. Their job was to study the cancer-causing potential of 85 chemicals. All 85 are said to be common in the environment. Ms. Gulliver explains that chemicals have the potential, or ability, to form dangerous mixtures. Even simple minerals can become dangerous when mixed with chemicals found in plastics or beauty products.
And so we're talking about everything that could be, you know, from basic minerals that are, you know, elements like copper, nickel, to plasticizers that are used in things like cosmetics and hairsprays and nail polishes, food wrappers.
Ms. Gulliver is also on the medical faculty of Otago University in Dunedin, New Zealand. While the chemicals are safe on their own, she says, the researchers found that many chemical compounds cause cancer in human cells. Working in groups, the scientists explored how different chemical mixtures could lead to cancer. Ms. Gulliver's team looked at the ability of different combinations to support the increase of malignant human cells. She says the big issue, what she calls the $64 million question, is which common, everyday chemicals do people need to avoid?
The $64 million question that everybody wants to ask is, well, which ones should we be looking out for? And the answer to that is, we don't know yet.
She says the current way to identify whether chemicals cause cancer is to test them one at a time. This method leads, she adds, to a long list of supposedly safe chemicals. She and her team say that approach needs to change.
We definitely need further research to find out what mixtures of chemicals would be more harmful than others, what groups of chemicals, when together, would produce more harmful effects. And at the moment, that is not known.
An estimated 1 in 5 cancers has been linked to chemical exposure. It may turn out that the cancer-causing villain is not a single chemical at all. The villain could be a deadly combination. The increase of risk to cancer could be from exposure to many chemical compounds at the same time, or simultaneously. The task force published its findings in the journal Carcinogenesis. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we look at the presidential election of 2004.
Freedom is on the march.
I speak not only for my candidacy, I speak for a new American century.
America's best days are ahead of us.
Given a choice, the American people will stand where this president walked.
Every 4 years, American political parties nominate their candidates for president and vice president. In the summer of 2004, Republican Party delegates chose George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for a second 4 years in office. During President Bush's first term, Islamic extremists attacked the United States. Almost 3,000 people died in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City and the Pentagon across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. President Bush declared a war on terror and led the nation into wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. After the terrorist attacks, President Bush enjoyed record popularity. Public opinion studies showed that almost 90% of the American public approved of the way he was doing his job. But the president's public approval rating decreased over time. One research group found that his average approval rating for 2004 had fallen to just 50%. Before a presidential election, the main parties use primary elections and caucuses to choose delegates to a nominating meeting or convention. The person winning the most delegates usually gets the party's presidential nomination. In 2003, 10 people were seeking to become the Democratic candidate for president. Among them was John Kerry, a senator from the state of Massachusetts. Another was Howard Dean, a doctor and former governor of Vermont. There was John Edwards, a lawyer and first-term senator from North Carolina. Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut also was seeking the nomination. In 2000, Senator Lieberman had been the Democratic candidate for vice president. Another senator and former senator were also seeking the nomination. So were two members of the House of Representatives, a former general, and a civil rights activist. Former Vice President Al Gore was not among the candidates. He had lost the disputed election of 2000 to George W. Bush. Mr. Gore announced he would not be a candidate in 2004.
I want my country back.
Some political observers thought Howard Dean would win the Democratic nomination. The former governor actively opposed the war in Iraq. He won praise for the way he raised money for his election campaign. Supporters gave him millions of dollars in small gifts through the internet. Then came the Iowa caucuses, the first step in the nominating process in January of 2004. John Kerry won with 38% of the state's delegates. John Edwards finished second with 32%. Howard Dean was third with just 18%. Senator Kerry continued to win delegates and gain support in other states.
Several candidates, including former Governor Dean, withdrew from the campaign. In early March, Senator Edwards also withdrew. He did so after Senator Kerry won victories in 9 state caucuses and primary elections that were held on the same day. The Massachusetts senator named John Edwards as his choice for vice president. Senator Kerry officially received the Democratic Party nomination for president at the party's convention in Boston.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty. We have it in our power to change the world, but only if we're true to our ideals. And that starts by telling the truth to the American people. As president, that is my first pledge to you tonight. As president, I will restore trust and credibility to the White House.
The combination of John Kerry and John Edwards balanced the Democratic ticket in several ways. Senator Kerry was considered a liberal. He came from the Northeast. Senator Edwards was considered more moderate. He came from the South. Kerry was Roman Catholic, Edwards was Protestant. John Kerry was born in Colorado in 1943. Like George W. Bush, he studied and graduated from Yale University. He then joined the United States Navy. He was wounded in combat and won honors for his service in the Vietnam War. He criticized the war after leaving the military. John Kerry graduated from the Boston College Law School in 1976. He became a lawyer for the state government in Massachusetts. Then he served 2 years as lieutenant governor of the state. He was first elected to the Senate in 1984. His wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, led a family foundation that gives money to important causes. Senator Kerry and President Bush debated 3 times on national television. They campaigned hard across the country. Foreign policy was the major issue during the campaign. Mr. Bush centered his campaign on national security. He said he was the best candidate to keep America safe from terrorists. He said Americans could trust him to be strong against terrorism. He presented himself as a decisive leader. He said Senator Kerry had changed positions on issues and would be unsure in the face of danger. In 2002, the senator had voted to give President Bush the power to use force against Iraq. But Mr. Kerry now criticized the way the Iraqi conflict was being fought. By autumn of 2004, more than 1,000 Americans had died in Iraq since the war started in March 2003. Thousands of Iraqi civilians also had been killed. Senator Kerry talked about the war in Iraq.
You got to be able to look in the eyes of families and say to those parents, I tried to do everything in my power to prevent the loss of your son and daughter. I don't believe the United States did that, and we pushed our allies aside.
Senator Kerry said his goal for the United States was stronger at home, respected in the world. He believed that the United States had lost respect from many of its allies because of President Bush's foreign policy in Iraq. The president defended American actions in Iraq. He said the war was needed to fight terrorism. He also expressed satisfaction that because of the war effort, Iraqis were free of a cruel dictator. In the United States, economic growth had slowed before George W. Bush became president. The economy got worse after the terrorist attacks in 2001. Mr. Kerry said the economy should be expanding at a faster rate. And he denounced the growth of the national debt under Bush's leadership. The president praised his administration's actions in difficult economic times.
6 months prior to my arrival, the stock market started to go down, and it was one of the largest declines in our history. And then we had a recession, and we got attacked, which cost us 1 million jobs. But we acted. I led the Congress. We passed tax relief. And now this economy is growing. We had 1.9 million new jobs over the last 13 months.
President Bush suggested a plan for younger workers to place some of their pay in private retirement accounts. Senator Kerry opposed this idea. The president opposed most operations to end unwanted pregnancies. The senator supported a woman's right to have an abortion. His position disagreed with that of the Roman Catholic Church. Early in the campaign, opponents of John Kerry's candidacy formed a group called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Its leader was a military veteran who, like Mr. Kerry, fought in the Vietnam War. The group argued that the senator was unfit to serve as president because of comments he made about his military service and his activism in the anti-Vietnam War movement.
John Kerry gave the enemy for free what I and many of my comrades in North Vietnam in the prison camps took torture to avoid saying.
The group even questioned the combat medals awarded to Mr. Kerry. Other Vietnam veterans, including several who had served with Kerry, denounced the charges against him as completely false. Some people believe the accusations and his campaign's delay in answering them had an important effect on the results of the election. Americans voted on November 2, 2004. As in the election of 2000, there were questions about voting problems during and after the election. The vote was especially close in the state of Ohio. Kerry's supporters reported problems with voting machines. They also said many people were illegally prevented from voting. The state had enough electoral votes to decide the winner of the presidential election. But the day after the voting, Senator Kerry decided not to question President Bush's win in Ohio. The final results showed that Mr. Bush won about 51% of the popular vote nationwide. Mr. Kerry won about 48%. George W. Bush would serve 4 more years as President of the United States. Bush's second term included a military surge in Iraq, a storm that devastated New Orleans, and a housing market that had many American homes underwater financially with shaky mortgages. That will be our story next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember.